Hello, I'm Luke Halpern from Pharmacy Times, and you're listening to Pharmacy Focus. The Pharmacy Times Pharmacy Focus podcast provides the latest industry news and information, thought leader insights, clinical updates, patient counseling tools, and innovative solutions for the everyday practice and business of pharmacy. In this episode, I speak with Drs. An Hen and Tamid Rahman, both cardiologists at Stony Brook Medicine's Center for Advanced Lipid Management, to discuss a major therapeutic breakthrough that took place at their center, the world's first commercial administration of plozasiran, an FDA-approved small interfering RNA medicine that can reduce triglyceride levels in patients with familial chylomicronemia syndrome. Hen and Rahman discuss how plozasiran offers substantial triglyceride reductions with infrequent injections, and how its successful use depends on coordinated multidisciplinary workflows and proactive pharmacist involvement in identifying and managing eligible patients. Drs. Hen and Rahman, thank you both for being here today. We're going to get started with Dr. Hen. Familial chylomicronemia syndrome, or FCS, is a rare but serious disorder that can severely disrupt quality of life for patients impacted. For pharmacists who may be unfamiliar with FCS, can you briefly explain what makes this condition so challenging to manage and why new therapeutic options have been urgently needed?
It's a disorder that leads to accumulation of triglycerides in our bloodstream. The traditional disorder starts with a dysfunction, a genetic disorder that affects the enzyme that regulates the metabolism of triglycerides. And when they accumulate in very high quantities, specifically in this FCS or familial chylomicronemia syndrome, it predisposes to recurrent episodes of pancreatitis that really affects our lifestyle and longevity. And so imperative to find answers to that, because patients who suffer from that, albeit a rare disorder, have a major comorbidity. And so way up until now had limited tools in our arsenal to deal with that. And development of new medication that can actually reduce triglycerides dramatically in this condition has not been available for us. And now that we have some medication for it, it's very exciting.
What differentiates the mechanism of action of plozasiran from traditional lipid-lowering therapies? And why is it particularly impactful for triglyceride reduction?
So the traditional medications like the fibrates and the omega fatty acids really targeted more of the enzymes and the receptors that were involved on the cell surface of the adipocyte when it comes to triglyceride breakdown or triglyceride synthesis. Whereas the plozasiran drug, it works on a more of an RNA level. So it's actually more on a genetic level. This drug is a small interfering RNA molecule that actually blocks the mRNA of the apolipoprotein C3 protein. And what the apolipoprotein C3 does is a protein that attaches to a lot of these particles that carry the triglycerides in the circulation. And when you have the ApoC3, it was like an evolutionary molecule that was designed to make sure that you still had some triglycerides around that you could use for energy in times of, let's say, starvation. So what ApoC3, or for short for apolipoprotein C3, so ApoC3 did essentially was it stopped the function of lipoprotein lipase, which is the key enzyme in the breakdown of triglycerides. So when you're stopping the function of lipoprotein lipase, you're having more triglycerides and more of these particles that carry the triglycerides, especially the chylomicrons. So this drug, the plozasiran drug, essentially is a small interfering RNA molecule that will bind to the mRNA of the ApoC3 proteins, preventing its translation or the production of the protein from being made. So you don't have ApoC3. That means you have more lipoprotein lipase activity and you could allow for further breakdown of the triglycerides.
Dr. Hen, from a real-world standpoint, what outcomes should pharmacists be watching for as this therapy enters clinical practice?
Right. So I think for the pharmacists and for those who are really into this, this is a really nice journey. We started with a medication very similar to plozasiran a few years back. Volanesorsen was an antisense oligonucleotide, which basically was an ASO, but basically a medication that does exactly what Dr. Mann just described to you, that prevents the translation of the protein. But that medication was fraught with issues, not approved in the United States. What was special about this new medication, the plozasiran, is that it has an additional tail, what we call a GalNAc moiety. It's a sugar at the end of it that sort of is very specific to the liver and took away a lot of the adverse effects. And so we have a safer medication now for the pharmacists and the clinicians. So a lot less issues with that type of medication. By the way, there is another medication, olezarsen, that is in the market and is similar, just interferes the production of an RNA molecule rather than the production of the protein from the RNA. And both of them seem very safe for us as clinicians and practical in the practice. In other words, there are not a lot of adverse effects seen in the trials. I can tell you that our practice is very busy with those patients. We have multiple patients on that class of medication. And we're not seeing really intolerance, adverse effects, or any kind. Any injectable could have injection site reactions, of course, with any medication that's new, potentially could have allergic reactions. You have to be cognizant of, but not a lot of adverse reactions in the trials to these medications. So really pretty safe from that standpoint. Do you think there are any other issues that you think of when you're treating patients with this?
No, I think the beauty of it with this compared to the other drugs is that it's like quarterly injections, right? Like, you know, it's like once every three months that you get this subcutaneous injection. Whereas the other drugs that you mentioned, like the older ones, like olezarsen, it's like once a month. So, you know, for now, it seems very safe, especially in the trials, like the Palisade trials as well, that looked at it and they showed a very favorable safety profile.
As the first center to administer a commercial dose of plozasiran, what logistical or operational considerations were critical to making rapid access possible following the FDA's approval?
Yeah, I really get excited about this because this really shows the efforts of our amazing team that supports us in our lipid program. You know, it first starts with identification of the patient. And, you know, we've been managing our lipid program for a few years now, and we have a bunch of patients with high triglycerides that we've been trying to manage with some of the older therapies. So, you know, to make sure like they are aware that new patients are coming or new therapies are coming and that they would be available for this difficult condition to treat, we have our lists and our medical record so that we know which patients have it. And when the time comes, when these drugs become available, we could reach out to them. And so so that was one aspect of this. The second aspect was our support staff being able to, you know, the staff that engages with the prior authorizations and works with the benefit verification. Once this got FDA approval, our clerical staff was able to ensure that the patient was available for an appointment on the day of FDA approval. And, you know, we had an idea that like, hey, maybe this drug will become available this week. But once we got word that it got FDA approved, we made sure that there were time slots in our clinic that were available for the patient to come in so we could talk more about the medicine. Talk about how it works and how how it treats the condition of FCS, and be able to start the process, which is like, you know, filling out a benefit verification form and then following through with that. So, you know, we were able to send the prescription electronically to the pharmacy that dispenses the medication. And then after we sent the medication electronically, my support staff, our charge nurses that handle a lot of our prior authorizations, actually called the pharmacies to make sure they got the prescription. And then our clerical staff was on the phone with the insurance company and the company that makes the medication, seeing where we are with the process every day, making sure there was no hiccups in the paperwork and making sure that the medication process was going through and that the insurance was covering it, which it did. And once it got approved for the patient, you know, the medicine gets delivered actually from the pharmacy directly to the patient's house. And, you know, they were able to communicate with the patient, making sure the patient received it, and then we actually had the patient come in and you know, bring the medicine with them so that we could make sure
the patient was adequately injecting the medication and taking the medication properly. So it really was a collaboration with pharmacy, with nursing, with clerical, and everyone working together for identification, reaching out, setting up the appointment, submitting the verification, following through with the authorization, and getting the medication delivered and administered.
Let me reemphasize a few things. I think we come back to this same topic almost every time we have our meetings. It's really less about the doctor sitting in that office. There's a lot of smart docs out there that knew the medications available now and had patients to treat. It is about your team and the processes you have in place. And you just heard scratching just the surface of what we do in order to be able to deliver, not just for this disease and this medication, but we have processes in place to identify those patients, processes to bring them up for discussion, review those complex cases, review our results, review whether or not we've been approved or not, so nothing falls in through the cracks. We have weekly meetings where we review those cases, but we also do education, not just about extreme topics for high-level physicians, but we educate our team. They're all present there to understand what we're doing, understand why it's important, what are the challenges, how to respond when things happen. And so it's the structure in that team that allows us to actually function at a higher level than just me sitting in the office saying, oh, you have the disorder, let me try and get you the medication. That works less on treating a large area and large population than having everybody educated, from your clerk, your medical assistant, your nurses, your other team of your nurse practitioners and the other physicians.
And then Dr. Henn, what role can pharmacists play in identifying patients who may have undiagnosed or misdiagnosed FCS and ensuring timely referral to specialized lipid centers?
All right, I'm going to let Dr. Rahman answer this. I think it links back to just identifying, being able to treat not just FCS, but all those extreme patients and making sure they're going to the right place.
So like a few things that the pharmacist can do to help identify these patients is one, noticing what medications the patient's already on, right? Like if they're seeing that the patient is taking like a fibrate or an omega fatty acid, maybe even niacin, which would be very antiquated for the treatment of triglycerides, but it is used as a last resort. And we're seeing that, like, you know, this patient keeps coming back and the pharmacist is aware that, like, hey, they're taking all these drugs. They could be in able to question, like, hey, have you ever heard of this condition called familial chylomicronemia syndrome? And, you know, where the problem is you have very high triglyceride levels because you're all taking all these drugs that are for triglycerides, and then be able to, like, educate the patient that there are new therapies available, like that could lower the triglycerides from, like, anywhere from like 70 to 80% with these drugs, like especially with plozasiran. So that's one way to identify. Another way a pharmacist can identify is seeing, especially in the hospital setting, patients that are being admitted recurrently for pancreatitis. You know, pharmacists play a key role, right, in our cardiology division, in our inpatient units. For every day, we have a morning huddle where we are with our residents, our fellows, our attending physicians, but also the nursing leadership, our case manager and social work leadership, and our pharmacist. And, you know, one of the implementations that we do is that the pharmacist is looking at every patient and seeing, like, hey, their lipid therapy is not optimized, and they will make suggestions. Hey, consider adding this medicine to lower the LDL, or consider adding the triglycerides are way too uncontrolled despite being on these medications. Maybe they need a referral to get the plozasiran, and then case management right then and there can start the benefit verification, and the physicians can order the medicine as well. So pharmacists can identify patients that way as well too, and provide finding the patient as well as reminding the physicians on how to to consider prescribing the medication.
I'll leave you with that. If you had to tell your pharmacist, these are the patients to identify, those with extremely elevated triglycerides, usually in the thousands, definitely over 1,000. The risk of pancreatitis, as you heard, and recurrent pancreatitis in those settings, usually over 500, but in FCS specifically, it usually is over 1,000. And having recurrent abdominal pains, there are skin rashes that are specific to the disorder. So there are things to identify, but the main thing is very elevated triglyceride and recurrent episodes of abdominal pain or pancreatitis.
And then I'll let you guys decide who wants to answer these final two questions. How do you see specialty and ambulatory care pharmacists integrating RNA-based lipid therapies like plozasiran into multidisciplinary care models alongside cardiologists and lipid specialists?
Yeah, I kind of touched upon that with my previous answer. And essentially, like I said, it's really just like, you know, working together and having a multidisciplinary approach to care. The pharmacist's main job is, you know, kind of like reviewing the patients that are being admitted, taking a look at the biomarkers and seeing if there's elevation, if there's any opportunities for improvement in therapy escalation. So they could work on workflow mechanisms to find strategies to better identify, have some alerts that pop up like, hey, a lipid was checked, the triglycerides are elevated. You know, in the Palisade trial, And a lot of these trials for these more advanced APOC3 inhibitor drugs for familial chylomicronemia syndrome, when we're looking at clinical score criteria, the triglyceride cutoff really that they're looking for is 880. So if they see that like triglycerides above 880, they get alerted to that. They could see focus on that patient specifically, or maybe a diagnosis code for a pancreatitis for an admission as well too. And they could take a look at that patient and see what their triglycerides are at as well. The eventual hope is not even just that cutoff of 880, but, you know, the next step from familial chylomicronemia syndrome is hopefully severe hypertriglyceridemia, where triglycerides are above 500, that still have a slight pancreatitis risk. But again, remember that these drugs are right now only approved for familial chylomicronemia syndrome. So the main focus is to identify FCS and to make sure that, like, hey, are these patients being treated? So they'll look forward, they'll communicate with the cardiologist, or maybe for these patients are often admitted to ICU, so maybe the critical care intensivist unit or primary care docs in the outpatient setting as well too, if they have patients that are getting checked for lipids and triglycerides are very high. And pharmacists can look at that and, you know, educate and be an opportunity to educate, like, hey, we have this drug available that could lower the triglycerides and the patient may benefit from it. And then they would discuss it with the case management and communicate with case management and nursing and whoever handles the prior authorization of all the steps of getting the medicine approved, where we are on the process. And then the pharmacist can further look at, like, hey, the medicine's being dispensed, and then take the next step further. Maybe they could even do some monitoring for, like, let's say, I mean, we haven't seen the platelet lowering with plozasiran like we did with some of the older drugs that were in a similar class. So, but, you know, they could monitor for things like, you know, sugar levels or liver numbers and other safety signals with some of these drugs in the future.
And then looking ahead, do you anticipate RNA interference therapies expanding into broader lipid disorders? And how should pharmacists prepare for a growing pipeline of RNA-based cardiovascular treatments?
So this is not the first RNA-based therapy that we have. To start with the saying that maybe the most common known one that is out there is inclisiran that is used for treating elevated LDL cholesterol. It is a small interfering RNA molecule that is given every 6 months after a loading dose and frequently used in our clinic and many other places. I think that it's a wonderful platform for delivering medication. It seems like it's working. I think that it seems like it's not only safe, but also very comfortable for patients because a lot of those have a lesser frequency of delivery of requiring injection. So I have a feeling we're going to see a lot more of that. And as I mentioned earlier, when you see them linked with other mechanisms that direct the medication directly to the spot where you want the therapy, such as the liver through that GalNAc particle, it seems like we're going to see a lot of it in many other fields.
The exciting use for these RNA therapies is going to be for the particle for lipoprotein A. And there's like a few drugs that, you know, we've been involved with some clinical trials with these drugs as well that are small interferon RNA molecules that will target lipoprotein A, which hasn't really had treatment yet. And so the data is promising in the lowering of lipoprotein A and reducing outcomes that are associated with cardiovascular risk. So, yes, it's great that we have one for triglycerides, we have one for LDL, and we're going to have a few for lipoprotein A. So this technology of the small interfering RNA mechanism and blocking the mRNA from translating into the protein is really exciting. And we're going to see right now it's really big in the cardiovascular space, but I'm sure it's going to also go into other fields as well for as a mechanism of therapy for many other conditions.
Well, those were all the main questions I had for each of you today. Is there anything else that each of you would like to add or anything that I missed?
No, it sounds like you've asked about the mechanism of what FCS is, what's the mechanism of the disease, why this is different than the tools we've had before. It seems like we've answered that. What specifically is to expect with these medications? It's, I think you covered most of it.
Yeah, it's okay if not.
Yeah, I will say, like, you know, the next step is really identification. You know, FCS is still, like, severely underdiagnosed. And, you know, you'll look at, like, the prevalence maybe, like, 1 in 1 million in worldwide. But it may be a lot more prevalent than that. We just have a terrible job of diagnosing it and especially finding it and remembering to treat it. You know, you're talking to a couple of cardiologists here that are focusing on lipids here, but oftentimes FCS is associated with pancreatitis, and the cardiologist is not usually aware about that. You know, we here are our lipidologists, so that's why we're so heavily involved. But we're cardiologists by trade, you know. So I think we need a more multidisciplinary approach. Like, once you identify these patients, that, you know, reach out to an expert lipid program like ourselves here at Stony Brook Center for Advanced Lipid Management, so that, you know, we could help your patient, you know, reduce their triglycerides with these new novel therapies and to improve their quality of life. You know, one pancreatitis episode is way too many. And if we could get it down to no pancreatitis episodes, that will significantly improve their quality of life and their mortality. So, you know, we need to identify more and collaborate more to get treatments for these patients.
Well, Dr. Hen, Dr. Rahman, that was beautiful. Thank you very much for your participation in this. I really appreciate it. It all sounded great.
Thank you for your time, Luke.
This has been an episode of Pharmacy Focus, a podcast by Pharmacy Times. Be sure to tune in for next month's episode. Thank you for listening.